When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix and Rohan Lockhardy.
This is the Crossover NBA podcast. I'm Chris Mannix. He is Rohan Lockhardy. And Rohan, we are just days away from a new calendar year. Are you ready for 2024?
Can't wait, Chris. You know, just a whole another year of draft picks become available. Someone, as you know, spends a lot of time on the trade machine. It's going to be thrilling. I'm very excited.
I don't know what to say to that, whether I should be excited for you to spend all that time on the trade machine. So
I just know how much you personally enjoy when I bring up a fake trade in the middle of this
fake
podcast.
Trades, yes. So yeah, I do love the fake trades that are never going to happen. You are batting 1,000 on fake trades.
Yes,
that never happened.
Correct.
I can respect that. All right. On this show today, we're going to discuss the Ja Morant effect in Memphis. We're going to talk about the Lakers. Are they starting to get into a place where they need to make a deal for this season to be successful? The Pistons, officially, historically bad. How low can they go and what can they do? But I wanted to hit you first. Off the top, Rohan, did you see what happened in Brooklyn on Wednesday night with the Nets and the Bucks? To just remind everybody listening what happened. The Nets played the Bucks on Wednesday night in Brooklyn, and this was a game that organizationally the Nets elected to punt on. Spencer Dinwiddie didn't play. Dorian Finney-Smith didn't play. Cam Johnson didn't play. Nick Claxton didn't play. Mikal Bridges, Royce O'Neal. Cam Thomas, they played the first quarter and that was it. Then they came out and it was the second unit all the way around. The Nets wind up losing that game by 20 points to the Bucks. I watched bits and pieces of it. I was going back and forth between a couple of games last night, but that the Nets would just give away a game like this, it rubbed me the wrong way. Like, I don't know how you took it, but it certainly bothered me that Brooklyn would so brazenly punt on a game this early in the season.
Yeah, man, it was bizarre. And, you know, Jacques Vaughn alluded to it before the game. They kind of put Mikal Bridges in a weird spot, too. You know, Jacques Vaughn said they wanted to sit him. Mikal Bridges had a streak he wanted to keep alive. So now it looks like Mikal Bridges plays only 10 minutes for his own personal gain, when, in fact, he said after the game, I wanted to play the whole game. I didn't want to rest. You know, we hear the term schedule losses in the NBA. You know, that's a thing that teams talk about. You know, Tom Haberstroh's done a lot of research on it. You know, there's this quote-unquote red zone. If you're playing a third game and fourth nights, blah, 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 this amount of travel, etc. You know, it's called a schedule loss. But even then, teams usually try. And I'm not saying the Bucks, or I'm not saying the Nets, you know, at least play the guys the first half and see what happens. You know what I'm saying? Like, at least play them a little bit more into the game. And if you need to rest them the second half, maybe the Bucks are blowing you out because they are, in fact, tired and not able to compete. You do that. It's tough, man. I don't like it. We've obviously seen so much about how hard the NBA is trying this year as it relates to the regular season. You know, now we're getting this whole round of the NFL reporters that we know taking a victory lap on the Christmas Day ratings. It's just tough. No one wants to see it. There is a small part of me, though. I think in general, we're on the same page. We don't want to see it. We want to see teams compete. We don't want to see teams give away games. At the same time, I don't know how to respond to the person, because we've had the conversation too with the trainer, whoever, who tells us this is the game that's the riskiest, whether it's for injury, etc. Like, that's why this happens. So I have a small bit of sympathy for it, but I don't want it to happen.
No sympathy. No sympathy. Because we're not talking about players that are Let's keep it with the guys that played and played a quarter, right? Mikal Bridges is 27. He's one of the NBA's great iron men. Has a long streak of durability. Cam Thomas is 22. And I think if you told Cam Thomas and promised him he could play 48 minutes for 82 games a season, he would be ecstatic about that. He'd be all about that. So the idea that you need to rest Mikal Bridges and Cam Thomas is ridiculous to me. It is. There is no medical reason to do something like this. I will not buy into any argument that says there is a medical reason to sit these guys out. They are healthy. They want to play. They are young. I just think the Nets figured, you know what? We're going to lose this game anyway. You might as well get our guys a little bit of extra rest along the way. When the reality is, like, would they have won this game with Bridges and Thomas playing throughout? It was like an 8-point game going into the fourth quarter, so they were within, you know, shouting distance of a potential win. If the NBA allows this to go unchecked, to me, they don't have much of a leg to stand on if they're going to gripe about these types of situations. I think the NBA has to find the Nets a significant amount of money for what they did on Wednesday night. Because you think about it, like, I read somewhere this was like a record crowd or one of the best crowds they had of the season, like 18,000 plus, standing room only in Barclays Center. Like, these people that bought tickets, which for the most part are not cheap. Like, they're cheaper than Knicks tickets, but they're right. not cheap overall. Like, these people that bought tickets, probably paid for parking, paid for food, are you know, going four figures into their pockets to go to a game like this. They don't deserve that. Like, they don't deserve that. Like, the Nets should do the right thing and at a bare minimum refund everybody their money for that game, because these people did not sign up to pay for and watch an exhibition game. They did not sign up to see the team that they're purportedly rooting for give up after the first quarter of that game. Not the players. I'm not talking about them. I'm not mocking the backups and what they do. But the organization, the coaching staff, gave up after the first quarter. And to me, that's something the NBA needs to check.
I also, and to your point, the NBA, you know, they have the player participation policy this year, and they made it a point, emphasize in-season tournament games. If you're going to sit, you need a good reason. You know, Jimmy Butler never gets mic'd up. He was mic'd up for an in-season tournament game. He was sitting, okay? That's the league kind of putting its hand on the shoulders of the Heat there. And I agree with you to this point. Like, the NBA can't also make it that only nationally televised regular season games matter. That can't be their policy. This was an exciting game between... You want to see, if you're a Nets fan, you want to see Giannis being pushed to a competitive edge in the fourth quarter. You don't want to see him play in a game where he's not getting up for it anymore because all the backups are in there. So I do agree that the NBA can't, if they're going to put their foot down this year and say it's an 82 game season, we're all about basketball, then it can't just be for the nationally televised games. It also has to be for the Wednesday night game in December when they think no one's watching.
And if you want to rest one guy who might have an injury issue, that's fine. You want to sit down Nick Claxton, who's been bothered by injuries in the past, Dorian Finney-Smith. I get that. Like, a lot of teams do that. Boston has been doing that with Kristaps Porzingis, with Al Horford. Like, I get that part of it. But when you have healthy guys like Mikal Bridges and Cam Thomas were coming into that game, to pull them out, that was disgraceful to me. To pull them out of the game was disgraceful and an embarrassment for the Nets organization that they need to make right with the 18,000-plus fans that came and paid for something significantly different. The other thing I want to hit on quickly before we get into our topics this week, Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, still an owner, albeit now a minority owner of the Mavericks, he spoke to the media for the first time on Wednesday since the NBA Board of Governors approved the sale of the Mavericks to the Adelson family. Cuban pocketing billions of dollars. The valuation was $3.5 billion for the Dallas Mavericks. Cuban still owns 27% of the team. He will still, for now, maintain control of basketball operations within the team. The Adelsons, they seem to have their eyes more on property in the Dallas area, building a resort in the Dallas area, and eventually plopping a casino down in the Dallas area where the Dallas Mavericks will, you know, supposedly play their games somewhere down the line. I listened to Cuban's presser you know, gaggle, I guess. A lot of the reporters there had were recording it on their phones. And some of it made sense to me. Some of it didn't. Cuban made it clear that this wasn't like the best offer he could get. He thought it was a good offer because it formed a good partnership, because the Adelsons are good at real estate. They're good at casinos. They bring a new revenue stream in. That's all things that Mark Cuban is no longer good at. But there are parts of it where it sure sounded to me, Rohan, like Cuban was talking about this Mavericks team not making as much money as people thought it did, like not being as profitable, perhaps, as people thought it was. He talked about losses at some point in that gig. And that's what surprised me, that Cuban seemed to be suggesting that maybe owning an NBA team wasn't as profitable as people perhaps suggested. I'm not sure if you had any takeaways on Cuban finally breaking his silence and talking to the media about this, but that was mine. That, like, you know, Cuban clearly sees an opportunity with this sale to both keep a quarter stake in the team, keep control over basketball operations, add more revenue, add potentially a new arena somewhere down the street. But I did find some of his comments interesting about kind of where the NBA is headed financially.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't had too much time to talk to people about this one specifically. Like, I don't know if he's got some kind of handshake deal with the Adelson family who run, like,
it's basically that. It's
the
basically
Sands,
that.
Yeah. You know, so, and now he also has his own, like, you know, infusion of capital if and when he needs to put some money into whatever casino or thing they want to build. You know, it's a couple things. I feel like, I mean, this comes up every CBA negotiation, right? Like, how much money are these teams actually making? There are a lot of teams that claim they make losses every year. I think players obviously push back against that. That one's always going to be murky to me, especially when you just know how much money these franchises sell for. You know, I'm sure it's not as lucrative as people assume. They're losing money. You know, are they losing money in a way that any of these owners are like, it's not like if you and I opened up a restaurant and we lost money and we're like, hey, if we don't start making money in 2 months, we're going to have to get out of this. Like, you know, it's possible they're taking losses in creative ways, etc. So I believe him when he says maybe it's not as lucrative as people think from the outside. The thing that interests me, and we talked about this when we first heard about the sale, is the idea that he's going to maintain control of basketball operations. I believe that to an extent, but I don't see how he's going to do that beyond anything else of being an employee. I think it's Patrick Dumont is going to be the governor, who I believe married into the Adelson family. But I think Mark Cuban is now an employee of them. Like, he obviously owns a large stake in the team. And I think it was Mark Stein. I don't know who pointed this out. Like, I think he owns a similar percentage of the Mavs that Joe Lacob owns of the Warriors.
Yeah.
The Warriors just have many, many, many owners. So it's a different situation. But, you know, he's not in charge anymore. Like, I think he can be removed from that position. Mark Stein reported there was no language in the contract of the sale guaranteeing that
Cuban,
he's going to be there
Cuban
forever.
Said that. Like, you know, Cuban was asked, I think it was Tim McMahon of ESPN that asked Cuban, like, is there language here that says you will maintain control of basketball operations for a definitive period of time? And Cuban said, no, a sale is a sale. You don't put that kind of thing in. And Tim followed up with, is it kind of a handshake agreement? And Cuban kind of went along with that line of questioning. I do agree with you that, look, this could change very quickly. Like, for now, they are singing Kumbaya with the Adelsons, Patrick Dumont, Mark Cuban. But the second there is a divergence of opinion on what direction to take this team, how much money to spend on this team, whatever it may be, Patrick Dumont is the guy that has the final say within the Dallas Mavericks. And right now, he and Mark Cuban are on the same page. But we have seen countless examples of how things like that can change very quickly. So for right now, Mark Cuban's in charge. But I don't look at this, to your point, as being Cuban is in charge for the foreseeable future, where you know, where he once was able to dictate what went on within the Mavericks. Now, it's an entirely different situation.
Agreed. It's basically, it's not going to be like what it was. It's not going to be like the Mark Cuban we got to know. And I'm interested to see exactly how long he's in charge of their basketball operations for.
Yeah, could be, at least this year. You know, Mavericks pretty good. Were they 18-13 after last night, right there in the middle of the pack in the Western Conference playoffs? But, you know, things come up, and it usually comes up around money and how much to spend in certain situations. We'll see if that happens within the Mavericks. All right, let's talk about the Grizzlies. Now, 4-0 since the return of Ja Morant, and the differences are right there in the numbers with Morant back in the mix. Last four games, they are 18th in offensive rating. They were dead last before that. Last four games, they are third in defensive rating. They were like somewhere between 9th and 11th before Morant got back. I'm not exactly sure where. Last four games, they are 9th in net rating. They were bottom third in the NBA before that. By the way, the Celtics are first in net rating over the last four games at 16.8, a ridiculous number. Like, that's a different conversation about Boston. Rowan, I said a couple of weeks ago that I thought that with Morant back, the Grizzlies would have to go 35-21 over the remaining games to get into the play-in. I believed it was going to take 42 wins to get just into the play-in because the Western Conference field is pretty competitive. I think you and I both agreed that if we were going to bet on it, we'd say no. Has your tune changed at all since watching the Morant-led Grizzlies over the last week plus?
Oh, it's tricky, man. It's such a double-edged sword. So they're playing the Pelicans, I believe it was on Tuesday night. You know, Ja, his first game back, he hits a game winner in New Orleans. The last 3 minutes of that fourth quarter and the 5 minutes of overtime are an absolute slugfest. Guys are gassed. They're missing free throws. Marcus Smart, by the way, finally returned for that game. Made some huge plays down the stretch. The issue I have, Chris, is like every single game for them is like playoff intensity right now. The defensive intensity they had in that game, to their credit, it was some of the best defense I've seen any team play this entire season, what they did to New Orleans down the stretch. Like, not a single easy shot for the Pelicans. And that was with Ja on the floor. At times, they always haven't had a great defense with Ja on the floor. What worries me is the amount of energy they're going to have to expend to get back in this thing. They're, what, still 9 games under .500? You know, still 4 or 5 games back of that last playing spot, even with this hot stretch. I mean, they could win 9 more games in a row and it just gets them back to .500. Let me put it this way. I think they have a better chance than I gave them credit for when we talked about this last week. That Pelicans game, like, really hit like a playoff game for me, but the more I watch them play, the more I realize, like, they can't afford to drop any of these. Like, they could not afford to lose that game. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. went to the line for 2 free throws with 0.4-tenths of a second left, or 4-tenths of a second left. Missed one of them, and I was like, oh my God, what if they lose? Like, every game is a gut punch for them. Every game is so high intensity. I'm nervous about their ability to keep it up for as long as they have to. So, better chances than I thought, but I'm still nervous, man.
Yeah, I'm still going to say no to them reaching the play-in for a lot of the same reasons that you said. Look, they got an infusion of energy with Ja Morant back in the mix. There's clearly, he changed the product on the court. He changed the energy in the locker room. He is just a shot in the arm to this team. Sustainability is the question, right? Like, you know, they're still going to be down Brandon Clark for the foreseeable future. I keep seeing these videos of Brandon Clark working out and I'm just not buying it. Like, I'm not like, maybe Brandon Clark comes back, but he's not going to be the player we saw before the injury, at least not this season. Steven Adams is not coming back. So, like, I think there's going to be a comeback down to earth for this team, which may happen as soon as this weekend. Look, on Thursday night, they've got Denver. On Friday night, they're in LA to play the Clippers. On Sunday, they've got to play Sacramento. Those are three tough games for this team to play, especially the back-to-back against Denver and the Clippers. So, look, if they come through that stretch, you know, 7-0, then maybe we're going to have a different conversation on this show next week. But for right now, I think it's a great story. I think Morant is an unbelievable story. Coming back, Western Conference Player of the Week in his first week back is like, you can't write a script like that. Like, I haven't been to FedEx Forum yet since he's been back, but you see on TV, it is rocking when he's in that building. So a tremendous story right now. But can they get to 35-21? Can they play, what is it, 60% basketball? Yeah. 60% winning percentage over the final 50-some-odd games? I'm still not buying it yet, Rohan.
It's going to be tough, man. And they can't afford an injury. Their margin is just so thin. And that's what worries me. When you're playing with a thin margin and that much effort every single night, I don't know that you can pull it off for as long as they need to pull it off.
No, and just quickly, I'm kind of, you know, Ja Morant got some grief for his celebration the other night in that Pelicans game. A lot of people interpreting it as him pointing a gun. I'm kind of over. I'm not getting into the weeds on stuff like that. Like my thing with Ja Morant is don't pull a gun, right? Like don't pull yeah. some of these celebrations, whatever. There are a lot of celebrations that a lot of guys do.
It was a TikTok dance. It was a TikTok dance.
I know.
Yeah.
But even still, as long as there's no actual guns involved, I'm not going to get up in arms over something like that. It just doesn't bother me all that much. All right. Let's talk about the Lakers. Saw them play in LA on Christmas Day against the Celtics. The Celtics could not make a three. They still beat the Lakers by double digits. Like this is, you know, outside of that win over Oklahoma City, you look at the wins the Lakers do have, not a lot of quality ones that are on there. When they step up against top competition, more often than not this season, they have lost. You know, LeBron James is still putting up LeBron numbers. Anthony Davis was great against the Celtics. But the supporting cast has not been what it was a year ago. Darvin Ham's rotations are getting pretty well beat up, both externally and internally. You're hearing some guys say, like, we're still trying to figure out who we are as a team. LeBron's making some weird statements. LeBron's talking after the Celtic game about how we don't have our full squad. Well, you're missing Gabe Vincent. Like, the injury issues that the Lakers have been specifically Jared Vanderbilt, who's back, and Gabe Vincent, who's out. And look, Gabe's a good player, but you know, other teams have had equally.
If your season's hinging on him, and I say this as a massive Gabe Vincent fan,
of course,
that's a tough one. Listen, I looked it up because I saw that quote. LeBron and AD after that game had played 669 minutes together. I have the tweet, but like, that's more than Jokic and Murray. That was more than Tatum and Brown. That was more than Towns and Edwards. Like, that was more than a bunch of duos. So I don't think they have the injury excuse because their top two guys have been healthy. The rotation, that starting lineup, you know, it's funny because the Lakers shot well from three in that Christmas Day game against the Celtics, but just the downstream effects of having that little shooting on the floor, I mean, it made it so easy for the Celtics in that game that even if they weren't making all their threes, like, you know, it made the Lakers so much easier to defend. Like, they're fine with Torian Prince taking eight threes if it means LeBron
Rui
James
Hashimura,
and AD.
Like, they were cool. Like, the Celtics let Rui Hashimura shoot.
He was
all
taking
day long
open corner,
game.
Taking open corner threes, and he wasn't making them pay. I don't think the starting lineup works. And what I don't understand is, it seemed like earlier in the year when they moved Austin Reaves to the bench, that was in large part to make sure they didn't upset D'Angelo Russell. Make sure that they're not putting him in an awkward position. Now they benched him anyway, but Reaves is still coming off the bench. But on top of that, Reaves, I think a big issue for them is Reaves has not really been the same player he was for that 20-game stretch that LeBron missed last year with the foot injury when it felt like Reaves really blossomed. It's not like he's been bad, but he certainly hasn't taken a step up, and he struggled for so much to start the season that, I mean, their rotation is filled with guys who on a given night could have a big night, but are not really consistent enough performers.
His shooting numbers are down, Austin Reaves, that is. He was 53% from the field last year. He's 47.7% this year. He was almost 40% from three last year. This year he's down to 37%. His scoring numbers overall are up. He's averaging 15 points as opposed to 13 last year. But he's definitely taken a step back in terms of his efficiency. My thing with him, though, is like nobody else is working with that team. Like, he's playing 29 minutes a game. Like, why is Austin Reaves not playing the same number of minutes as LeBron James or Anthony Davis? Like, I want to see this guy in the 35 minute per game range. And look, Darvin Ham said he thought that he didn't want to overextend him. Like, the guy, how old is Austin Reaves? Like, 25? Like, what am I? He's 25 years old. Like, who cares? This goes back to the whole conversation about the Nets and, you know, not playing Cam Thomas or Mikal Bridges. The guy's 25. Like, yeah, he played for USA Basketball this past summer, but he's 25. Like, you should be able to play extended minutes when you're 25 years old. I look, Austin Reaves to me is not the problem. I think he's going to be fine. D'Angelo Russell is kind of a problem, but the three-point shooting is ultimately a major problem. I know the argument is, from the Lakers' standpoint, is that they won a championship with mediocre three-point shooting. But that was kind of a, not taken away from the championship. It's a bubble championship. It's a championship. There's lots of, you know, lots of things you have to overcome in the bubble to win a championship. So I will never put any kind of asterisk on that championship. But getting away with bad three-point shooting in that type of season, I think, is a little bit different than getting away from it in this type of season.
And, right now, and Anthony Davis also shot out of his mind that year, especially in the playoff run. Yeah,
he's not been a three-point shooter really since.
Yeah.
I think they need more shooting because teams are packing the paint against this team. Some nights, like Christmas Day, when Davis got off and was brilliant, that happens. LeBron was awful on Christmas Day. He followed up that 40-point explosion against Oklahoma City with, like, what was it, 15-point clunker on Christmas Day. So they need more offensively. And if this team is still treading water in the way it's treading water right now by mid-January, I think Rob Pelinka has to do something. Look, I was absolutely for Rob Pelinka bringing the band back together last summer. I thought continuity should have been prioritized. That was a team that was great in the second half of the season. They were great, really, after the Rui Hachimura trade. They made the Western Conference Finals. You don't blow up a team like that to overextend yourself and get like a Kyrie Irving. You just don't do it. But it hasn't worked this year. The team is not gelling this year. And at some point, you're going to need to add another scorer if you're going to hope to maximize this season with LeBron James, which really, right now, when you look at the landscape, you're talking about two players, right? You're talking about Zach LaVine in Chicago, who is very available, and you're talking about DeJounte Murray in Atlanta, who his availability is mixed at the moment. I think he probably is available, but not in the same way that Zach LaVine is. When you look at those two guys or somebody else, how aggressive do you think the Lakers need to be about adding something to this mix?
I mean, I think they got to be aggressive. It's funny that you mentioned Murray and LaVine because the Hawks and Bulls played each other the other night. The Bulls, it seems like every starter you take away from them, the more powerful they get.
Sitting through that.
I only watched the end of that fourth quarter, which was an interesting game, but Alex Caruso making huge plays. The Hawks have been a pretty big disappointment. We're going to talk about them at some point, even with Trae Young playing really good basketball. I definitely think the Lakers need to make a move. And I'm with you. I was willing to give the Hachimura, Russell, build a chance. You know, they showed something in the playoffs. LeBron seems to have an ability to get more out of these role guys. I was willing to see, can Hachimura be a new player playing off LeBron? Remember Christian Wood? Remember Christian Wood was supposed to be on this team?
Shout out to my man Kevin O'Connor with the Ringer. I sat next to him on Christmas Day. And, like, Kevin has been a Christian Wood defender for some time now. Like, I remember when Dallas acquired Christian Wood, I remember Kevin in Boston saying to me, Christian Wood's going to be an impact player with Dallas. And I thought I told him he was crazy when he said that. Christian Wood just hasn't been an impact player anywhere he's gone. He has been
he's played for a third of the league already.
He's been, and most of them have been bad teams. I look back, Christian Wood was actually a rookie on that 10-win Philadelphia team. So he has been on some really bad teams. Look, there was so much hope for Christian Wood coming into this season. I mean, Darvin Ham talking about how he recruited him hard. Rob Pelinka recruited him hard. They get him for effectively the veteran minimum. And he can't be out there on the floor. He doesn't defend.
He's getting DNPs.
He doesn't play
the
way.
He's getting DNPs.
He's getting DNPs. Like, Jackson Hayes is getting minutes over him. Like, they gave it a try early on. It didn't work. And now Christian Wood is back, staple to the bench.
What's crazy is the first like couple weeks of the season, that three-man group of LeBron, AD, and Christian Wood was somehow had like a massive net rating.
He was the highest plus-minus in that team.
He was guarding KD down the stretch of that first Suns game. You're like, what in the world is happening here? I definitely think they need to make a move. I was out on LaVine for them for a while. In my mind, I was like, and I think Jovan Buha eventually reported this. Shout out to Jovan. But I was like, if you're going to trade for LaVine, why wouldn't you just trade for DeRozan? He's cheaper. And I think, you know, probably more on LeBron's wavelength.
But the spacing, though, like
exactly.
LaVine
but now I'm back on. Maybe you do try to get LaVine. The problem is, I'm back on. You try to get LaVine. As much as I'd love to see Caruso back in LA, the price I think is. I don't think they have enough to get Caruso and DeRozan or something like that. At this point, I think the Bulls are Kobe White. He's been playing out of his mind. I don't think they have any interest in bringing LaVine back into the fold. Maybe you can get him for pennies on the dollar. And I think that's the kind of player, frankly, they need more now than DeRozan, even if DeRozan is better. But I'm with you, man.
Look,
At first, I was not into the LaVine idea. But
yeah, LaVine's not shooting the three well this year, 33.5%. But he historically has been a high 30s, even low 40s three-point shooter. So I think if you put him alongside LeBron, where shooters tend to always thrive, opposite Anthony Davis, I think you're going to get back the guy that was making 38, 39% of his threes. And that just opens everything up for the rest of the team.
LaVine is a third option is not something we've really seen before, and maybe that's what he needs at this point in his career.
No, what your challenge is you're absorbing the last 3 years of Zach's contract, which are big numbers. And look, he's been a guy that's had injury history, especially with that knee.
Yeah, like the knee,
as recently as like a year ago.
He's out right now.
General managers had told me that Zach LaVine, acquiring him via trade, was among the most risky trades that you could make because LaVine's contract and that knee, some of them interpreted as kind of a ticking time bomb if you bring him in on a deal. So there is a potential high reward for getting Zach LaVine, but there's also high risk because getting him is probably going to involve D'Angelo Russell. Maybe it involves Rui Hachimura. I don't think the Lakers would throw Austin Reeves in that mix because they want to keep him around because he does play well. It has played well opposite LeBron James. Murray's interesting to me too. Like it doesn't work with Murray and Trae Young. And that was the question coming in with those two. Like, how would they make it work? You're right. Trae has turned it around, you know, over the last 20 games. He was off to an awful start to the season, but that floater is starting to work a little bit for him and his shot has kind of returned. But we have enough of a sample size with Atlanta to know that the Murray and Young combination doesn't work. Is he more interesting to you than Zach LaVine? Less interesting? Where does he rank?
I like DeJounte Murray more as a player than Zach LaVine. I think that he's shot better the last couple of years, but I just don't know that. I don't know that he's a better fit for what the Lakers need right now. If you're talking just terms of pure basketball, I think that LaVine is a better fit. When you think about things like contract, who's the better player, etc., you want Murray. But I don't know that he's a better fit for the Lakers. His three-point percentage is pretty good the last couple of years, but I don't fully buy into it as much as someone like LaVine. Although, I mean, Murray's great defensively and, you know, he's got more size. And yeah, that listen, beggars can't be choosers. You know, I think they could use either of them, but I think I like the LaVine fit a little bit more.
Oh, look, he's been healthier too. I mean, he did have that torn ACL that kept him out of the 18-19 season. But before that, you know, he played 81 games in 17-18 since the ACL injury, 66, 67, 68, 74, played 30 games on this season. So I think there's a measure of reliability you're going to get with Murray. And I don't think you can dismiss the defensive aspect of this. The Lakers do not have perimeter defenders. They don't. And that's a problem, you know, for them. So adding him to that mix takes a little bit more pressure off of Davis in the paint. You're not going to get blown by quite so often. So I kind of like the DeJounte Murray one, I would say as much or more as I do Zach LaVine. He's shooting 46% for the season, 37.5% from three. That's a pretty good number. I mean, either one of those guys. Look, the Lakers, as has been noted elsewhere, like they can't do anything until January 15th because all these contracts that were signed in the offseason are eligible to be traded. But if the Lakers get to January 15th and we're still exactly where we are right now, where they are having some success against mediocre and bad teams and little success against good and great teams, I think Rob Pelinka's got to do something. I think he's got to make a deal for one of these two guys or somebody else if they're out there that makes sense with this group. Finally, Rohan, let's talk about your Detroit Pistons, the team that has dropped now 27 games in a row. And I feel comfortable saying and predicting that they will drop 28 in Boston on Thursday night. Yes.
Are you sure? Jaylen Brown is out.
Yes, let me tell you something. The Celtics plus 16.5 line is giving me fits right now. It's giving me absolute fits. I've been thinking about that line for like 2 hours, Rohan. Giving me fits. Jaylen Brown's out with the Celtics at home. Oh, God. They're going to just tattoo the Pistons. Cade Cunningham has been great. No question about that. But the coaching has been bad. The shooting around Cade Cunningham has been bad. Cade has been a turnover machine for most of this losing streak as well. Look, Tom Gores came out before Christmas and to his credit, you know, was front and center. I give him credit for that because you don't see a lot of owners out there
for sure
doing stuff like that and being available to reporters in situations like this. He expressed some optimism about the core. He expressed confidence in Monty Williams, but this thing's getting out of control, Rowan. Look, I admire the fight that they had in the second game against Brooklyn. They didn't give up. Like, they got down eight, they rallied back, they fell behind like by 9 or 10, they rallied back. Like, they fought their way back into that game. But man, in the crunch time, this team is just a bumbling mess. Like, they just don't make good plays down the stretch. They miss free throws, they create turnovers. Like, end of that, even the coaching, like, end of that game, like, there was a play that Monty seemed to be running for Alec Burks at the end of that game, in a game that Cade Cunningham had 41 points. Like, I'm watching it. I've been hate watching the Pistons really since mid-December. Like, I've just been watching them. Like, I watch every Pistons game since mid-December because you have to see how this streak goes. I'll be watching the game tonight.
Every fourth quarter of theirs is like the most compelling basketball in the league because the team playing against them is like, we can't be the ones who give up this streak. Their fourth quarters are genuinely thrilling basketball. And a lot of these have been close games now. I mean, the Jazz one that we talked about a little bit while ago, this Nets game the other night. Listen, I really like Monty Williams. I don't know how much longer he can be the coach of the Pistons. I really don't. And I get that.
Can you eat $70 million?
They're in a terrible position. They are in a terrible position.
I have never heard of a team eating 70. Like, I mean, I guess it's probably happened before, but
they are
players, you can eat that kind of money.
Right.
Listen,
I get it. They're in a terrible position. Terrible position. But how do you justify it? Like, I genuinely have so much respect for Monty Williams, but I don't know how you can justify it. Like, what's their limit? 35 losses? If they lose 40 games in a row, you like at least fire the entire staff besides him? Like, I don't know how you keep it.
You can't hold those guys responsible for it. You can't. Monty, I don't have an answer to this. I don't. They're going to play Boston on Thursday. They're going to get crushed. They then go home and play Toronto. And that is the next most winnable game they have for the foreseeable future. If they can't beat the Raptors on December 30th, then they then have to go to Houston, which has been struggling of late, but still a pretty good home team. They play at Utah, who they couldn't beat at home with nobody playing for the Jazz. They then play at Golden State. Then they're at Denver. They have two home games against Sacramento. Houston comes back. You got to get all the way down to a game at Washington, which, again, just battered the Pistons a couple of weeks ago on Detroit's home floor to find another winnable contest. I think here's just my take on it. If they lose to Toronto on December 30th, somebody's got to go to start the
2 months without a win. 2 months without a win.
You cannot. Like, I forget, it was one of the Pistons beat writers. I think it was Amari Sankofa, who's been on the show recently, who tweeted out like the Ja Morant-led Grizzlies had more wins than the Pistons since February. Like, it's wild.
MLB teams have won a game more recently than the Detroit Pistons.
It's incredible. Somebody, I think, has to go. I just, if it was year two of this Monty Williams contract,
yeah,
I could kind of understand it, but you are in year one of what's reported to be a $70-plus million contract, the richest contract at the time for an NBA head coach. Can you really pull the trigger and pull the shoot on Monty Williams at this early in his coaching tenure? That would take some balls from Tom Gores. That would be Tom Gores going, you know what?
That would be a lot of Little Caesars pizzas.
I'm going to eat that loss and go away. But, like, is there another solution? I don't think Troy Weaver – I've said this many times. I like Troy Weaver. I admire Troy Weaver. I think he did a great job in Oklahoma City. I can't see Troy Weaver surviving another draft. Like, I can't. Like, you – not that, you know, the Cade Cunningham pick wasn't solid. Like, Cade, redraft it. Maybe you still put him at number one. I probably wouldn't, but he's right up there in the top two or three. But Killian Hayes was a bad draft pick. Some of these other guys they have there, they haven't panned out. So if you finish the season with like 7 wins, there's no way the front office is brought back. No way on earth. They had a chance, Rowan. They had an opportunity to build out a team through the draft. They had some hits, no question about it, but they've had more misses, and that's a big reason why this team is where it's at right now.
And I hate being fire this guy person, but man, I it's a result-based business at the end of the day, and if you lose as many games as they've lost in a row, I don't know how you continue.
Well, I'll be hate-watching on Thursday night. People listening to this on Thursday in Boston, plus 16.5. If you're listening on Thursday, I'll be banging my head against my desk right up until tip-off, deciding whether to take that number. It's going to drive me crazy. Watching on Saturday, my birthday on Saturday, Rohan, which coincides with the birthday of LeBron James. LeBron James, Tiger Woods, Sandy Koufax, and Chris Mannix. Who of those four have made the biggest impact on sports?
This somehow ruined all three of those guys for me.
I'll let you ponder that question. All right, Rohan, good stuff. We will do this again next week.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
Home Club for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.